Okay, we are back and we're putting perspectives on the productivity dilemma side, and we're turning our attention to absorptive capacity. Cohen and Leventhal's pretty hugely influential idea. I'm going to put my normativity out there right from the outset. I think the idea is hugely significant and very informative in lots of ways, but I also do think that it's a tremendously clumsy metaphor that they're putting forward to think of knowledge as something that is out there, that the organization just kind of sucks in a little bit like a sponge, is somewhat problematic, and creates sort of an unhelpful image both of the organization and of the enough knowledge in its surrounding world. So that's kind of one part of my normativity. I also think that it's a very tough article to read because it says like just so absolutely many things about absorptive capacity, and just instead of saying one thing very deeply, at least when I read it, it feels much more like an idea catalog than a clear progression towards a very elaborated idea. Which is basically also the way I think that research is working with it, as much more as a source of hypotheses than as something very definitive. And finally, it's also one of the papers that you'll encounter that has some of the most difficult version of what's called econometric methods. And so the methods can be very difficult to read and understand. We'll see some that are a little more difficult, but this one's pretty hard line in itself. It's one of those that can be tough even for other researchers, not just for people who are just moving into the topic, right? So I do have an opinion on some of the methodological choices that I'll get back to on the other side of going through the paper's argument. Basically, what I want you to focus on is the theoretical considerations that come before the analysis. I think that's primarily where you'll find the good takeaways. Okay. As I mentioned before, absorptive capacity is one of these really important ideas in understanding especially how networked ambidexterity works, and how companies can succeed in opening up their innovation processes to take place not just within organizations but at the boundary of organizations. That we are going to return to much more when we get into the future of innovation management. If you want a really good kind of piece to give you a sense of networked ambidexterity working out, there's a good paper called Interorganizational Cooperation and the Locus of Innovation. It's published in Administrative Science Quarterly in 1996 by Powell, Coput, and Smith-Doerr, I think is how you pronounce it. That I recommend. You can also very beneficially read Henry Chesbrough's 2003 book called Open Innovation, The New Imperative for Profiting from Technology. It's kind of that's going to bring out why you want absorptive capacity to be something that organizations can leverage in order to benefit from open forms of innovation, right? This paper talks about what organizations need in order to exploit external knowledge, right? So that is knowledge that exists in the outside world, outside the boundaries of the organization, and is not something that the company itself generates, right? I keep saying this, we'll get back to that image of innovation when we talk about the future of innovation management, but it should be seen kind of in the context of the fact that the dominant model of innovation at the time this paper was written is what's called in-house R&D, that organizations pretty much have dedicated research labs responsible for their development activities, right? So it's innovation within the firm. That pattern is changing And this more open model is kind of coming into its own, driven especially by the work of Eric von Hippel, the empirical emergence of open source and crowdsourcing, markets for technology, and all the things that we'll talk about when we get to the future of innovation management. So the point basically being organizations are increasingly looking outside the boundaries for innovation, and they actively seek to learn from other organizations. Absorptive capacity is going to be a very important mechanism for allowing that learning to happen and to function well. Right? So the question basically is, how do organizations get good at utilizing external knowledge? And basically what Cohen and Leventhal propose is that there are three processes that you need working to do this, right? You need to be able to recognize the value of external knowledge, right? You need to be able to assimilate it, right? So you need a mechanism to transport something from outside the company into the company, and you need to be able to apply it, right? So those three processes are the core of absorptive capacity. Equally importantly, absorptive capacity is going to be a function of prior knowledge, right? Whether viewed as an individual feature or an organizational one, the ability to absorb new knowledge, to learn, depends on what you already know, right? So in this sense, Cohen and Leventhal's argument kind of connects to Shane's, but there are significant differences, right? Shane talks about prior knowledge. Cohen and Leventhal talk about prior knowledge, but they're talking about something that is... they're talking about different kinds of prior knowledge, and that's worth keeping in mind. Cohen and Leventhal are mostly interested in the organizational level, while Shane is interested in the individual entrepreneur, right? Cohen and Leventhal, kind of very relatedly, are mostly interested in the development of absorptive capacity from prior knowledge in large companies. Shane is interested in entrepreneurs, right? And that's why he's interested in the individual. Also, their assumptions about knowledge are quite different. Consequently, their methods are going to be very different. And it's also just worth being aware that they're talking about prior knowledge about different things, right? Shane is talking about knowledge of markets, product applications, potential customers. Cohen and Leventhal are talking about knowledge about technologies, right? So you can kind of... you can imagine that Cohen and Leventhal are talking about technical knowledge, right? The ability to understand scientific, technical aspects of whatever knowledge is out there. Shane is talking about being able to see opportunities for applying technologies. And that has to do with use contexts. What kind of things do customers want? What would be valuable to customers? Okay, so that basically, this idea that what you can learn, what you can absorb from the outside, depends on what you already know. It can seem kind of obvious, but it actually has a few quite profound implications for how companies explore and how they can avoid being creatively destroyed, disrupted, etc. We'll return to those. Okay. So Cohen and Leventhal, their starting point is to argue that the ability of individuals to absorb new knowledge depends on what they already know, right? That's basically this long, long review of learning theory and creativity research, but the long and short of it is that learning about something new requires you to already have some depth in what you already know, right? Understanding something in depth is crucial for using it widely. That's what you'd call transfer learning. And much of what you have learned, so basically the amount of like the breadth and depth of what you already know matters for your ability to learn something new and to transfer it to new contexts, right? In other words, you kind of need a lot of readiness to learn something. Especially if we're dealing with technical knowledge, it's going to be very difficult to pick up, say, a paper on artificial intelligence without having some substantial prior knowledge of computer science and programming and machine learning, right? So that's kind of in parentheses, right? That's jives pretty well with what we're trying to do here, right? We're trying to teach you a whole lot of things so that you can have a readiness to learn new things, right? You have to learn to learn, and you have to have an approach and an attitude towards problem solving that you can apply to new things. You kind of want a repertoire of ideas that allow you to absorb and put new things into a wider framework, right? So you need that breadth, but you also need a deeper understanding of particular areas, and that's kind of what you get when you do specific assignments, right? So you should have pretty much what Cohen and Leventhal call a rich pre-existing knowledge structure, right? But even then, right, even when you have such a rich background to learn from, learning about new areas is going to be relatively difficult and time-consuming and pretty much an incremental process in the way they describe it. Especially because you basically have to know a lot in order to apply knowledge creatively, right? One thing is grasping it and having a base understanding. Being able to apply something creatively means that you have to know much more, and you have to have a much more internalized sense of knowledge, right? Okay, but from there, from the individual level, Cohen and Leventhal are going to move up to the organizational level. They're very explicit that absorptive capacity at the organizational level is not just the sum of individual employees, but basically there is something more that the more or less that the organization can do here. When we think about Henderson and Clark and their depiction of organizations and how knowledge does not flow smoothly across all organizations to the places where it's most useful, it's quite obvious that this is the case. I don't think you can really overestimate the challenges of getting the right knowledge to the right problem solvers. Basically, if you apply that Austrian perspective that Shane is pushing, it's absolutely or almost impossible to plan for that process, because most often insights or what's sometimes called aha moments arise serendipitously, right? It's something that's very, very difficult to structure and to make sure that everyone knows everything in the right place at the right time. So there's definitely like an organizational component here, such that the learning capacity, the absorptive capacity of individuals can more or less reflect the organizational capacity, right? For Cohen and Leventhal, it's really mostly a matter of how knowledge flows across the organization boundaries, how it flows within the organization, and how that process is mediated by individuals, what they call gatekeepers or boundary spanners, right? Those people who play a role in connecting and knowledge within the organization and across the organization. Those people play a role, especially if there's a big difference between the knowledge that you're trying to absorb and the knowledge that you already have, right? You can imagine that the task and the challenge of transferring knowledge is going to be more, it's going to be a bigger challenge if there's a wide gap between what people already know and that knowledge that you're trying to impart on them, right? You can also think about those boundary spanners and gatekeepers as organized in different ways. They can either be widely distributed throughout the organization, so that basically it's everyone's little task to try to absorb, or it can be centralized. You can imagine a central office for scanning technological possibilities. Cohen and Leventhal, I think, are pretty clear in how they think about this. In general, there may be many people across the organization who perceive it as their task to absorb, and that's going to be important, especially in an era of ferment, when technology evolves rapidly, and a very like centralized management of opportunity, of technological opportunities can be very difficult to sustain, right? So you kind of have to think about this a little bit in terms of the division of labor, right? Do you want everybody to have this as part of their work, or do you want it to be centralized? And basically, it's one of those cases where maybe a deep division of labor, having a very clear-cut sense of who should be looking outside and bringing new technologies and new ideas in, maybe that's not such a particularly good idea. So this is basically, you can think of this as an exploration and exploitation issue, right? You want everybody engaged in sort of an alert scanning of the outside world and trying to incorporate that in, or do you want people to be focused on exploiting what you already know? So there's another kind of exploration, exploitation dilemma that Cohn and Leventhal push into, right? What is kind of the right relationship between shared knowledge and diversity of knowledge within the organization? Do you want people who are very homogenous, because that homogeneity is going to allow you to have increased efficiency, you're going to be more efficient in your problem solving, or do you want diversity of knowledge, such that people might not be as efficient in working together, but are better able to incorporate new inputs, right? That kind of leads you into the question of what the optimal degree of overlapping knowledge is between individuals in the organization. I think, and this is a little bit of a problem with the whole paper for me, is that they talk about it as if this is something that you can realistically optimize and plan out, as if this is somehow knowable in advance, such that organizations can make a choice between the diversity of knowledge versus the degree of shared knowledge that they want. I really think this is somewhat far beyond the limit of what leaders and strategists can realistically know something about, or even exercise meaningful control over. At a course level, you can certainly do it, right? You can decide, do we want physicists or computer scientists or management people to be working on this? But this is just going to be very difficult, really, I think, to make a very clear decision on, right? And they kind of push at it, especially when they say the following, right? Critical knowledge does not simply include substantive technical knowledge. It also includes awareness of where useful complementary expertise resides within and outside the organization. Right? So it's very hard to know in advance, I think, just what is going to be the critical knowledge, right? You can kind of know that when you're dealing with the problem, but if you can define what would be the solution, you've already come a very long way in your understanding of the problem. So in my opinion, basically they're talking about knowledge in a way that's extremely difficult to subject to management, right? And it reminds me sort of a paper entitled Odd Couple, Making Sense of the Curious Concept of Knowledge Management by Mats Alvesen and Dan Chairman. It came out in the Journal of Management Studies in 2001, and I'm just going to quote, like, just from the abstract. Knowledge is an ambiguous, unspecific, and dynamic phenomenon, right? I think that's just key to challenging kind of the idea that there's a definite mass of knowledge out there that you can absorb. There is a very real contradiction between knowledge and management. I think that's where I would sort of disagree with Cohn and Leventhal, right? That said, I think the most interesting ideas that the paper kind of draws out from the relationship between absorptive capacity and knowledge development, right? Between your ability to learn something new and your ability to to create something new is that are the following, right? Building knowledge at one point in time is going to allow you to have an easier time learning at a later point, right? So if at one point in time you invest in building up knowledge, that might later allow you to learn more effectively, right? Investment in absorptive capacity may be necessary to exploit what they call spillovers from other innovative organizations, right? So having a high level of absorptive capacity may be something that you need in order to benefit from the innovation someone else is doing, and to identify those spillovers. They make a point that the lack of investment in absorptive capacity can lead to a lockout, right? In the sense that if you don't invest in absorptive capacity, you can lose the ability to get in on a new technology at one point, which would be a recipe for creative destruction, basically. I think that's a very interesting point they make about possessing absorptive capacity as being related to the ability to form precise expectations for technological development, right? So the sense that if you have a high level of absorptive capacity, maybe the uncertainty of new technology, maybe the uncertainty of predicting the S-curve will be less for you, right? So that uncertainty is not going to be equal across the population, right? Also, this idea that absorptive capacity can kind of arise as a side product of doing R&D, which basically means that R&D can be meaningful to do even if it's not strictly functional. Right? Okay, so let's take those points a little bit one at a time. So the idea that absorptive capacity depends on prior knowledge means, like, almost per definition, that the ability to absorb knowledge or even just learning at a basic level depends on making at some point the investment in building up capacity, right? So in other words, you need to be at the forefront of your learning needs to be able to be explorative, right? So essentially, the way you want to think about it is that the investment in, not just in exploring, or rather that the investments that you make in exploring aren't just related to the outcomes of that exploration. The investments that you make in exploration also spill over into your ability to learn at later points in time and to be explorative at later points in time, possibly more efficiently, right? Also, one of the points of absorptive capacity is that so many ideas are going to be more or less freely available in the world, right? It's, or at least going to be accessible at a lower cost than it would take to develop them, right? We'll get back to that when we talk about the future of innovation management. But basically, failure to invest in absorptive capacity can make it difficult or even impossible for you to benefit from ideas that are already out there, right? Technology that is immediately applicable or kind of floating, spilling over from other organizations can be difficult to benefit from unless you've built up a capacity to recognize their value and to incorporate them, right? It may sound kind of crazy that ideas kind of flow over, spill over from organizations, but this idea, this phenomenon of innovation spillovers is actually a pretty common phenomenon. It's very common that companies can't exclude others from understanding what their technology is or how it works. And so not having sufficient absorptive capacity can lead to all these missed opportunities where organizations end up having to reinvent the wheel, basically, having to invent everything themselves instead of just benefiting from what is out there. That's an inefficiency in itself, right? But really the more threatening side of that is if you don't continuously, and continuously is probably the key word here, if you don't continuously invest in absorptive capacity, by instead getting rid of risks, right, reducing uncertainty, it means that you can be excluded from future developments, right? So when Christensen and Foster emphasize how hard it can be to jump to a new technological S-curve, right, that becomes potentially even more difficult if you haven't been constantly investing in building up your capacity to learn about those new S-curves, those new technologies that underlie new S-curves, right? Basically, I'm just going to quote here, right? If the company does not develop its absorptive capacity in some initial period, its beliefs about the technological opportunities present in a given field will tend to change over time because the company may not be aware of the significance of signals that would otherwise revise its expectations. As a result, the company does not invest in absorptive capacity, and when new opportunities subsequently emerge, the company does not appreciate them. In other words, right, losing the ability to see applications of new technology. That was already hard, as Shane kind of reminds us, but failure to be at the forefront of investment can kind of lead you to face even stronger challenges there. As regards S-curves, Cohen and Leventhal kind of emphasize that absorptive capacity can be important in order to form these precise ideas about how the S-curve of a new technology will develop, right? Remember that the progress of the S-curve, when you're looking forward to a new technology, when you're anticipating how the S-curve will shape up, is going to be rife with uncertainty. You don't know when or if significant improvement will take place, and you don't know what upper bound there is on performance for new technology. So in other words, there's kind of a forecast that the individual organization can contribute to realizing by innovating itself, but also that something may depend on others. And basically, you can kind of think of this as saying, if you have a high level of learning readiness, your ability to anticipate how a technology will evolve can be higher, right? I'm going to quote, right? The possession of related expertise will allow the company to better understand and therefore evaluate the import of intermediate technological advances. Right? So knowing something is going to make it possible for you to understand how is the S-curve going to shape up? What are going to be the next steps in this? When can we expect to see progress, increase in speed, and decrease in speed? So in that sense, like in an uncertain environment, absorptive capacity is going to affect what you could call expectation formation, right? And that's important because, and I'm going to quote again, in this way, absorptive capacity is crucial for deciding what new opportunities an organization needs, exploring around and possibly dedicated business units to pursue, right? Without absorptive capacity, you're kind of shooting into the fog about which new technologies to target. Okay. And finally, and perhaps most hopefully, it's possible, perhaps even favorable, to build absorptive capacity without investing in it directly, but rather this idea that you can create it as a side product, an added effect of research and development. I'm going to quote again, right? We may therefore consider a company's R&D as satisfying two functions. We assume that R&D not only generates new knowledge, but also contributes to the company's absorptive capacity. Right? That's what they summarize in figure 2. And it kind of explains why companies can conduct research, the results of which they don't need, or if they get used, they might even just flow over to competitors. Because it's not the results of the innovation itself that matter. It's more the capacity that you build by innovating. Right. My reading of all of this is a little bit of a mixed bag, I think. I think it's sort of an unfortunate effect of Cohen and Leventhal's argument that knowledge appears to be something that can kind of be moved in and out, and something that can be optimized by what we'd call a priori, like before experiential decisions, right? They do talk about knowledge diversity, for instance, as something that you can optimally decide around. And I just kind of like to quote an Austrian economist called Hayek's famous phrase on this, and I think he puts it quite nicely, is that the curious task of economics is to demonstrate to men how little they know about what they imagine they can design, right? And I think that kind of humility, this idea that maybe what we maybe we can't really design our way out of this problem that Cohn and Leventhal are trying to address, right? One of the reasons I think that Cohn and Leventhal get to the place where they go is the way they conduct their empirical analysis. Lots of variables get thrown around in that analysis, and they model the build of absorptive capacity and R&D investment, and the underlying arguments are going to be filled with things that one can try to measure, but that there are also going to be all kinds of problems with measuring. Absorptive capacity, for example, is done with something very, very simple in their analysis. It's going to be about R&D investment divided by sales. And the whole point of their argument, I think, is the recognition that the value of external knowledge depends on prior knowledge, and that this is, and that this kind of plays out through some very complex mechanisms. But then when they kind of turn those variables into something as simple as R&D spending divided by sales, or they ask R&D managers to use a 7-point scale to describe how important specific types of external knowledge are, I can't possibly imagine that that's a realistic way to capture a complex phenomenon that those R&D managers must, I can only imagine, be committing so many resources to thinking about. Is it meaningful, for instance, to measure ease of learning as a variable with only two outcomes, yes or no? When, for instance, they talk about the fact that an innovation is related to existing knowledge, there's going to be tons of complexity in that. For instance, an innovation consists of, as we all know by now, lots and lots of components based on different knowledge. And so basically their method section continues into these really quite opaque decisions. Opaque specifically in light of the fact that absorptive capacity is, at least in my opinion, a super complex phenomenon, right? What is it that makes some organizations able to identify technological opportunities in their environment? That's going to depend on very many things, and many of those things aren't going to be measurable in any particularly accurate sense. So I'm very, very skeptical of the tendency in this paper and in lots of innovation research really to collapse complexity down to single, simple measurements, right? To me, it has kind of a variation of what's called the streetlight effect. And that's, for me, kind of takes up a lot of my understanding of their analysis. That's not to say that it's not worth taking seriously. I absolutely think it is in theoretical terms. But I can't help thinking that a lot of the choices taken in their analysis could have been meaningful in many, many other ways. And that's kind of exemplary of what Andrew Gelman and Eric Loken call research in a garden of forking paths, right? Research where there are just so many apparently obvious and right choices to make that you just, by nature of all those choice variables, have to be skeptical of the outcome. Having said that, I don't think there's any particular doubt that absorptive capacity is an important concept, and this idea that prior knowledge shapes your ability to both identify opportunities and predict technological development is going to be super, super important, even if it's something that's very, very hard to measure. It's worth saying that this detour into my normativity and my interpretation of this research is one that's shaped by my attitude being pretty different from the mainstream point of view. You'll find that many, many people have much more respect for the empirical results from Cohen and Leventhal's analysis, and much more respect than they have for in-depth and qualitative research, not to mention historical and anthropological studies like the studies that I find most convincing. This difference basically comes down to a different perception of whether management research is a science or something else, and also the kind of certainty that we can have, the kind of faith that we can have in our results and their implications for practice. I take a much more skeptical view of our ability to both be scientific in the hard science sense, and also about our ability to say very definite things to practice. I think the implications for practice depend very much more on the practice than we tend to give it credit for.
Okay.
So with that, we are going to leave Cohen and Leventhal for now, and we're going to turn to Brown and Tugwid.